As you know, this month's worship and community theme is courage. Last week, I spoke of courage in general and what it takes for us to be courageous as individuals and in community. And does anyone remember one of those things? It's fine if you don't. I know that's a long time ago, right? Vulnerability. Vulnerability, as paradoxical as that might sound. So next week, by request, I'll be speaking on the courage of our convictions that we hold as Unitarian Universalists. And on October 22nd, I will be leading another white supremacy teach-in at the request of our National Black Lives of UU organization. And some of you may remember that at the first white supremacy teach-in in May, I asked you a couple of questions that you put on index cards. I'm going to be bringing, feeding back some of those questions to you and your comments. So that will be definitely part of the focus of that day. So today, I'm telling the story of Bishop Carlton Pearson, who you see on the cover of your order of service, and also up here. And some of you might have read Bishop Pearson's story in our national magazine, The UU World, back in 2009. And The UU World is online. Just Google UU World, and you can read. The archives go very, very, very far back. And this is a powerful and exemplary story of courage. Bishop Carlton Pearson grew up in San Diego in an all-African-American neighborhood. His family were strict Pentecostals, so no smoking, no drinking, no cussing, and no dancing. But as he says, everybody went to church, and that was where it got wild. As he says, people spoke in tongues, got slain by the Holy Spirit, and they definitely believed in hell to the point where even the faithful could get possessed by the devil or by demons. Carlton's father and grandfather were ministers, and at an early age, he followed in their footsteps. And about this hell, devil, demons idea, Carlton says, "The devil was as present and as large as God. The devil had most of the people. He was ultimately going to get most of the people. Demons were all over, in the church, in the schools, in the neighborhoods. Everything was a devil. And if you believe it, you experience it. And so we were trying to fit into a big, broad world that didn't understand, that we felt was basically hellbound. And we were to reach them, but we couldn't relate to them, and they couldn't relate to us. So when I was young, my world was getting smaller, and the world was getting larger, and I was smothering. And I had to find a way to get out of that world and still go to heaven. And Oral Roberts University offered that to me in a sanctified way." Oral Roberts University in Tulsa, Oklahoma, was founded by the Pentecostal holiness minister Oral Roberts, who died in 2009. In Carlton's home, Oral Roberts' television show was really one of the only shows that were okay to watch. He said that his mother really enjoyed Oral Roberts' television show. And Roberts really was the first televangelist, one of the first ministers to realize the power of television. So Carlton went to Oral Roberts University in 1971, the first member of his family to attend college. He was a gifted singer. He had already produced some gospel albums by then. So he joined the university's World Action Singers, a touring gospel choir. So with them, he sang on the Johnny Carson show and on stage with other celebrities, and that was a whole new world for him. And Carlton also became very close to Oral Roberts himself, so close that Roberts referred to Carlton as his black son, and meant that profoundly. After graduating from Oral Roberts University and its seminary, Carlton and his best friend and roommate, a white minister named Gary McIntosh, started a new church in Tulsa in 1981. They named it Higher Dimensions, and it came to be known as Higher D. And what was most unusual about it is that it was completely racially integrated from the start. It was in the white part of town, which is South Tulsa, still mostly a white area. And this integration really was unheard of at the time, and particularly so in Tulsa, because Tulsa, like everywhere in the U.S., has a history of racism, but Tulsa's history of racism is particularly deep and dreadful. And you will learn more about that from me in January, because there is a powerful Unitarian Universalist connection to that deep and dreadful history of racism in Tulsa. And Carlton's sermons were known for being positive, funny, and also quite scholarly. I've read some interviews with people who had gone to Higher D, and for them, Carlton was really the first person they had heard who had been well trained in biblical scholarship, learning the Hebrew and the Greek. So as Higher Dimensions grew, so did Carlton's stature among Pentecostal members, ministers nationwide. He traveled a lot, nationally and internationally, guest preaching. He was a frequent visitor and consultant to George W. Bush during his presidency. He was often at political fundraisers for the Republican Party as a spiritual speaker. He was named to the Oral Roberts University Board of Regents. And in 1995, Carlton was named a bishop by the International Communion of Charismatic Churches. He also had his own show, his own television show, on the Trinity Broadcasting Network, which is a Christian channel. And meanwhile, that was Carlton's own rise to success and fame as a minister. And by the late 1990s, Higher D had a membership of over 6,000 people, with 3,000 to 5,000 people present for one of the several Sunday morning worship services. They were taking in $100,000 a week during those worship services. I know we roll our little UUIs about that, don't we? Our entire budget every week. Not quite, but pretty close. Our entire budget every 2 weeks. And Carlton also started an annual week-long evangelistic revival that was held on the campus of Oral Roberts because they needed that much space, that drew, you know, thousands of people in Tulsa, but 30 to 40,000 people from around the country. And so that revival had a huge economic impact on Tulsa every year, for sure. Higher Dimensions owned really an entire campus of buildings. It had its own ranch, and they were planning on building a hotel. The church had 8 ministers in addition to Carlton, of course, lots of other staff, and they had dozens of programs for people of all ages, and they did outreach into prisons and nursing homes. So that's by the late 1990s, and Carlton is really at the peak of his career as a Pentecostal minister. But something did not feel right to him. He had always preached a conventional evangelical theology, which tells us that hell is a horrible place, a weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth for eternity. And the only way to avoid hell is to accept Jesus. But Carlton really had received a good education at Oral Roberts University Seminary, so he was always reading and studying the Bible's origins, using the Greek and Hebrew that he had learned in seminary. And he had begun to doubt some of what he had been preaching, especially around that idea of hell. And it all came home to roost one evening in front of the television. It was 1996, which was shortly after the massive genocide in Rwanda in Africa. Here's how Carlton tells the story. Well, my little girl, who was an infant, was in my lap. I was watching the evening news. The Hutus and Tutsis were returning from Rwanda to Uganda, and Peter Jennings was doing a piece on it. I'm eating a meal, and I'm watching these little kids with swollen bellies, and it looks like their skin is stretched across their little skeletal remains. Their hair is kind of red from malnutrition. The babies, they've got flies in the corner of their eyes and of their mouths. And they reach for their mother's breast, and the mother's breasts are empty. There is no milk because they are starving. And I, with my little fat-faced baby and a plate of food and a big screen television, and I said, God, I don't know how you can call yourself a loving, sovereign God and allow these people to suffer this way and just suck them right into hell, which is what my assumption was going to happen to them, as they were not Christians. And I heard a voice say within me, so that's what you think we're doing? And I remember I didn't say yes or no. I said, that's what I've been taught. The voice said, we're sucking them into hell? I said, yes. And what would change that, said the voice. Well, I said, they need to get saved. And how would that happen, said the voice. Well, somebody needs to preach the gospel to them and get them saved. So if you think that's the only way they're going to get saved, for somebody to preach the gospel to them, and that we're sucking them into hell, why don't you put your little baby down, turn your big screen television off, push that plate of food away, and get on the first thing that flies and go get them saved. And I remember I broke into tears. I was very upset. I remember thinking, God, don't put that guilt on me. You know, I've given you the best 40 years of my life. Besides, I can't save the whole world. I'm doing the best I can. I can't save this whole world. And that's where I remember, and I believe it was God, this voice saying, precisely, you can't save this world. That's what we did. Do you think we're sucking them into hell? Can't you see they're already there? That's hell. You keep creating and inventing that for yourselves. I'm taking them into my presence. And I thought, well, I'll be. That weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, where the pain comes from, we do that to each other, and we do it to ourselves. Then I saw emergency rooms, I saw divorce court, I saw jails and prisons, I saw how we create hell on this planet for each other. And for the first time in my life, I did not see God as the inventor of hell. He says, the way the God of the Bible, particularly the Old Testament, is presented, he's a monster. The God we've been preaching is a monster. He's worse than Saddam Hussein. He's worse than Osama bin Laden. He's worse than Hitler, the way we've presented him in Christianity. Because Hitler burned 6 million Jews, but God is going to burn at least 7 billion people and burn them forever. He has this customized torture chamber called hell, where he's going to torment, torture, not for a few minutes or a few days or a few hours or a few weeks, but forever. And the more Carlton started to think about it, the further away from conventional Pentecostal teaching it led him. This is how his mind worked. If there was no hell, then you didn't need to accept Jesus to avoid hell. And if you didn't need to accept Jesus, it didn't matter if you were a Christian. It didn't even matter if you came to church. Everyone in the world was saved already, whether they knew it or not. No one was going to hell. Everyone was going to come into the presence of God. As a biblical scholar, Carleton was easily able to see how so much of the story of Jesus' life points in this direction, that Jesus had saved everyone from hell, the whole world, no exceptions. It's right there, I can tell you myself, in the Christian scripture. Carleton called it the gospel of inclusion, and it focused on a God of limitless mercy. And that's what we just sang about this morning, the wideness of God's mercy. For the love of God is broader than the measure of our minds, and the heart of the eternal is most wonderfully kind. Carleton named this new notion, as I said, the gospel of inclusion, but there was actually already a name for it. This idea that we are all saved and that no one goes to hell, because, as Carleton realized, what kind of a just, merciful, and loving God would do that to anyone? Because, you know, eternity is an awfully long time. So, my Unitarian Universalist people, what is the already existing name for what Carleton was preaching?
Universalism!
Yay! And Carleton says, you know, he'd been taught in seminary that Universalism was heretical, but I don't think that they had actually taught what it was, just that it was a bad thing. So then Carleton started preaching his gospel of inclusion, first to his minister staff, he went to them, and then to his congregation. He was so filled with the beauty and the awe of what he had learned, directly from divine revelation as he had experienced it, he thought everyone would just get it and agree. And I've had that experience in my life. We probably all have. But like, look, isn't this obvious? Isn't it wonderful? Well, there were 8 ministers on the staff of Higher Dimensions, 4 white and 4 black. And when Carleton shared his new ideas about hell and salvation with them, the 4 white ministers quit almost immediately, followed by about 85% of the white congregants. They left to start their own church nearby. And Carleton, as you can imagine, was devastated by this. These were people he had loved and been loved by and shared life with. Because at first, he was still kind of wanting to figure it out loud with them, you know, because they would be challenging him with their, you know, you get into these dueling, cherry-picking scripture fights that really no one can win because it's all on how, you know, the interpretation is chosen. And I think partly because at the beginning, you know, he was uncertain in his responses because he was figuring it out. That's not the tradition in Pentecostal holiness churches. The minister, you know, knows everything and it's crystal clear and cut and dry. And of course, that is how you all respond to me and the words that come from my mouth. So I think, you know, they weren't even prepared to struggle with him. And isn't that terrible? I want us to struggle together. So over the next several years, as the word spread of Carleton's new gospel, he was attacked openly and by name in charismatic religious magazines as a heretic. Lots of other prominent ministers spoke out against him. And Oral Roberts probably could have made a positive difference, but he chose not to. He told Carleton privately that he still loved him. But Carleton was removed from the Board of Regents of the university and banned from holding his big conference there. But people had already, the numbers of people coming to his conference had been declining drastically anyway. So in 2004, the Joint College of African American Pentecostal Bishops formally declared Carleton a heretic, which is a huge, huge thing. And that was really it. The membership of Higher Dimensions went down to 200 people from 6,000. In late 2005, Carleton sold the Higher Dimensions campus to avoid foreclosure at a loss of $3 million in equity. Those 200 people who were left, people who had seen the truth, come to believe the truth of Carleton's message of inclusion, they renamed themselves New Dimensions. And they held services at 1 p.m. on Sunday afternoons in the building of Trinity Episcopal Church in downtown Tulsa, which Carlton hilariously recites was just like the whitest, waspiest place in town, you know, with its beautiful stained glass windows and formal pews. But over a few years, he was starting to bring in 400 people every Sunday afternoon. And then things began to get even more interesting. One local minister reached out to Carlton Pearson in 2005 when his life was so bleak and everything was falling apart. And that was my colleague, the Reverend Marlon Lavenhar, who is minister of All Souls Unitarian Church. All Souls Tulsa is the largest congregation in our Unitarian Universalist faith with over 2,000 members. When Marlon saw and heard, because of course this was all quite newsworthy in Tulsa, when he'd seen and heard that Carlton had been declared a heretic and that his congregation, you know, the building was gone and his congregation torn apart, of course he realized that Carlton's gospel of inclusion was classic universalism. So he called him up and invited him to lunch. And they started having lunch together once a month. And Marlon's aim was pastoral. Do not doubt it. He wanted to reach out in love and comfort and affirmation. And Carlton says, Marlon was very sensitive and seemed to understand even more than I did in some ways where I was. Yeah, because we're used to being called heretics. He was probing my mind and I his, and he was offering brotherhood. And I didn't have many friends in this town. Then Marlon invited Carlton to preach at All Souls. The church was packed and the entire offering was donated to the New Dimensions congregation. And Tulsa's United Church of Christ ministers and congregations also reached out to Carlton as well, and he was accepted and credentialed into their ministry in 2006. So a few more years passed with the New Dimensions congregation, known as New D, meeting at the Episcopal Church and with Carlton preaching occasionally at All Souls. And then, and I'm quoting now from a story in the UU World, our national magazine, in April 2008, Marlon preached a sermon that got some buzz on the internet because he was defending presidential candidate Barack Obama's pastor, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, by placing him in context with the Hebrew prophets and the historic black church. And Marlon showed Carlton a thankful letter that Wright had sent. Carlton thought out loud, "We should have come to All Souls because y'all are really interested in this kind of thing, racial justice. We wouldn't be like boarders or visitors. Y'all would want us there. It would mean a lot to you." So Marlon extended another invitation. New D could have the 11:30 a.m. Sunday service time for the summer when All Souls went down to a single 10 a.m. service. What caught everyone off guard was that about half the people who showed up at that service were All Souls members. They loved the emotion, the spirit, the high they got from, quote, "bucking and shouting and getting our praise on," as Cassandra Austin, a member of Carlton's congregation, describes it. And then that August, which is still the quietest time of the church year, the question came up at a staff planning retreat. What time should they offer the New D group once the church year started up again? Marlon phoned Carlton to work it out, but Carlton interrupted him. He knew by then that he couldn't continue his ministry in Tulsa. To support his family and his faith, as well as to spread his message of inclusion, he had been spending many of his weekends guest preaching in places like Chicago, Atlanta, Denver, and Los Angeles. So that doesn't work when you're also needing to be the pastor of your own congregation. "So I announced to the choir last night," he told Marlon, "that I'm not going to keep doing services here. New Dimensions will dissolve. My wife and I are going to consider All Souls our spiritual home, and I will encourage my members to do the same." And they did. We're used to, if the man of the house has a vision, you follow it, no questions. We said yes, says Nicole Ogandare, a 20-year member of Carlton's congregation. And like all of our congregations, All Souls doesn't vote on new members or visitors, just accepts them. So there were no board meetings about whether to merge the congregations, no committee about how to smooth the transition, no discussion groups about how the church would adapt to make the new members welcome, or, just as important, how to keep old members in their comfort zone. There just was no time. It just happened. And there have been so many changes and adjustments that have been made over years, the intervening years, regarding worship at All Souls and other aspects of congregational life. Some longtime members left, unhappy with the changes, yet far more new people have come to be part of All Souls community, most of them young and many of them people of color. All Souls is one of our truly multicultural, multi-generational congregations, which is, I believe, why it's continuing to grow. Carlton Pearson, who is still known as Bishop Pearson, of course, is an associate minister at All Souls, and he preaches there whenever he is in Tulsa. He also has worked as a United Church of Christ minister in Chicago, and then he went on to create a new spiritual community in Chicago named New Dimension Chicago. He is a sought-after speaker and preacher. He's written a lot of books based on his gospel of inclusion. And, of course, he has his own website, Bishop Carlton Pearson. I don't know if it's, I don't remember if it's .org or .com, but you can see what he does there. He does a lot of really, really interesting things. There is, as you have heard, so much courage in this story. So much courage. First is Carlton's courage in listening to that voice that came to him as he was watching the evening news. And not only listening, but hearing that voice as the voice of God telling him what he needed to do. He listened and followed what that voice had to say. And then there was his courage in sharing that message in his congregation and beyond, and living with the consequences of that. Some years ago, soon after the loss of his congregation and building, after being branded as a heretic, Carlton said, "I miss Oral Roberts University. I miss the board. I miss being Bishop Pearson, the celebrated preacher. I miss my people that packed our place out and came by the thousands. I built that whole place for them. And I miss being able to pick up the phone and call my friends all over the country and say, I'm going to be in your city in a couple of weeks. Let's get together. And you know, that whole world, that's all gone. At least it appears like it is for me. I am not celebrated among those people. They don't think about me anymore. It's like I died and they mourned my death and they're pretty much over it." But in spite of this pain and loss and grief, Carlton refused to let go of what he had come to believe. He was open and accepting of something new and powerful that changed his life in every way. And, of course, for him, it's a much better way than it was before, and so different. Then there was the courage of Marlon Lavenhar reaching out to Carlton and Carlton accepting that invitation, each reaching out to someone so different in many ways. And there was the courage of the All Souls congregation in welcoming the New Dimensions members to come be part of them, and the courage of the New D folks going to this mostly all-white church in this New England-looking building in Tulsa that has no cross on the steeple, and that they came not as guests, but as real and accepted members of the community, not as a separate group. And that is what it means to be truly welcoming. Not asking folks to come be like you, but to want them to come be who they are with you. And allowing new people being themselves to change who you are as a person and as a religious community. That is a truest, courageous welcome, a true welcome. So I have some questions for you. And I invite you to talk about them in your coffee hour after church, with your friends, whenever you choose to think about them on your own. And let's read them together, and certainly stand up if you need to see them. That's not a problem. So let's read them out loud. Was there ever a time in your life where you gave up or lost something that was very important to you? What was that experience like? How did it change you, your life, the people around you? How did you get through? What held and sustained you? So I invite you to reflect on these questions with one another even. The great poet Langston Hughes says, "Wandering in the dusk, sometimes you get lost in the dusk, and sometimes not. Beating your fist against the wall, you break your bones against the wall, but sometimes not. Walls have been known to fall, dusk turn to dawn, and chains be gone." When life calls you to live change or live loss, may you find courage within and courage around you to go forward in hope in the spirit of Carlton Pearson. Amen and blessed be.